Another episode here of Comaholics. I believe this is
What's a Comaholic?
Comaholic. Oh, well, Comaholic is a comic book addict slash alcoholic.
Ah, fair enough. So it's not just you're drunk on comics. You're just drunk.
However you want to take it, you know.
That's a very open-ended question, and yeah. I'll just let that
go. And I gave you
that
one
go. I'm just going to let that go. So this is episode 6.
That's right.
You got to find a foreign language number for 6.
Well, you can go with the Deutsches again, and it's
no.
Sex.
It's, we need a different language.
What's Japanese?
I don't know. I don't speak Japanese.
Okay. All right. Well.
So
we'll
anyway,
go with 6 for now.
This is we'll just I don't know.
A half
English,
a dozen.
English is a strange foreign language to me because I'm so terrible at it most of the time.
So the premise behind the show, if you haven't carefully, dutifully listen to the last 5 episodes. We get some beer. Oh, we gotta clank our cans again.
Yeah, our past blue ribbons, yeah. Let them clank.
Chink. And as always, I'm your host, The Apocalypse, joined by my host,
Dirt. How you doing?
And our special guest,
Dan. DJ House.
DJ House.
And we're going to talk about some comics. It's our love, it's our passion, and
this is probably the worst intro we've done.
Maybe we should start over.
Something
again.
I don't know. There's something about maybe it's because we're in this basement. We're in this new location.
Yeah.
Just it feels
outside,
different,
guys.
Yes, and it's colder than a witch's tot outside.
Very good choice.
Cold tots. So it's if those of you who live in Minnesota, sorry about your stadium.
Yeah.
Did you see the video of that roof collapse?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I'm actually currently right now, guys. This one's just like that. When the music kicked in, it is -8 right now.
And is that wind chill or is that?
That is true temp.
What?
Are you serious?
Their wind chill was like -13 or something.
Oh my god!
Wow.
And no,
in Minnesota.
Right.
Okay.
In the cities in St. Paul.
Okay. So. I was gonna say not here.
No.
No, here
it's warming up.
It's a balmy like 14 outside, something like that. Yeah. Where you're just like summertime. Wind chill at -3. Woohoo!
So this is one of our multiple studio locations.
Yes, this is the Apocalypse's basement.
Right.
If you don't remember that part of the Bible, that part in the Apocalypse where they're in the basement.
Yes.
That's
right
it
before the 12 horsemen came.
The 12 horsemen. Yes. My favorite was Leroy. So you've been fixing up this basement. Looks pretty nice down here. Pretty clean. Not like my basement, which is kind of creepy and awful. So this is pretty nice down here. Now, this is we have a couple traditions on this show. One of them is that because I work in a comic shop, there's some comics that get dinged and beat whatever, so you guys can dig through those and take what you want.
Yes!
And then, because this is the pre-Christmas episode, I got you each something.
Aww. What?
Yeah. So, Eris, that's for you.
No way! Nice!
Chief Wiggum's Book of Crime and Punishment.
Fantastic! I knew there was a reason why I kept you around.
Oh, yeah, there must be a reason. And then for Dan, I do this for everybody. You got one of these.
Oh.
Marvel Premiere Hardcover Wolverine Origins Starring.
Swag, man, thanks.
And the reason why I give everybody one of those, flip it over on the back, look at the quote at the top.
Bam! Look at
that. So when I started writing reviews for SuperheroTimes.com, And I did that for a year or so, and one of them ended up on the book.
Thank you. I really appreciate
that. But actually, I do like that story a lot, which is you can probably get from the nice quote on the back. But,
oh, man. Thank you.
So, bought a whole bunch of those when it came out. I was like, my name's on this book!
Well, this is a very special episode, guys, because it touches to heart with myself, because you might hear in some of the recent ones as the studio member that I'm very biased to this company that we're doing a lot of these reviews for. It holds kind of true because it is local as well. And
so we're almost 5 minutes into the podcast and we're just now getting around to the subject here. And so what is this company that's near and dear to your heart?
It is Avatar.
Avatar Comics. Avatar Press, actually. Yes. Now, don't go to avatar.com. That is something completely different and you get really confused. You go to avatarpress.com. And so we're going to be looking at a couple of their series that are actually very similar in theme. And that's going to be Black Summer and Absolution. Then we're also going to spend some time talking about a little bit about the new Lady Death. We had the, what is this, the issue zero that came out.
Right.
And then we're also going to talk about some of the other, you know, series that they have going on right now.
Upcoming.
Stuff that's coming up next year. Yep. So, Avatar theme. Not James Cameron.
No.
Which, by the way, and not the Airbender.
No.
Yeah.
So this is yet another Avatar for your lexicon.
When that movie, like the previews first came out for Avatar, that movie, I thought it was in reference to the Avatar cartoon that my daughter likes to watch.
Yeah.
And I was completely confused.
A great cartoon, really.
Yeah, I was completely confused because actually when I actually saw the movie, I didn't ask anybody about what it was about. I just heard, oh, it's a great movie, you gotta watch it. So I was expecting, like, this Avatar character, the arrow in his head and all that stuff. It didn't happen.
But then they made a movie for Last Airbender, which it sucked. But, but you know, stick with the animated and you'll be okay.
Which one are we going to do first?
Well, I crammed in issue 7 of Black Summer so we could cover that one first. and it was a, well, we'll start Black Summer. And then I think we should go with Lady Death, and then finish it off with Absolution.
Pretty good.
Okay.
Kind of like a you know, mini series.
Like a little sandwich.
Yeah. Compliment sandwich.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah, I like sandwiches when we do our podcast. Podcast sandwiches are
man,
good.
Man, I have to go for a sandwich right now.
Which is funny because I was watching Undercover Brother last night with the mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like I do like mayonnaise.
He had, like, the hot sauce in his watch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so we both stopped to take a drink at the same time.
DJ House was the gentleman that turns on to Black
Summer. Wait, are you really a DJ?
I am.
Really?
Yes.
Do you do house music, or is that just because that's your last name?
I do a little bit of both.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, do you actually like...
I had it one time, I'll be honest.
Do you like mix and scratch DJ, or are you just like, here's my iPod, I put it on shuffle?
actually, I take more claim to the iPod shuffle. now, I did have some turntables, I'll be honest, you guys, it's a lot harder than I thought, and I'm very lazy. And at the time that I had it, it just wasn't my thing. Yeah.
You actually had a collection of records?
I did. Yes, I did. Wow. I still do. I kept some of like the special ones out of there, like some Beatles First Prints, things like that. But a lot of my doubles I got rid of that you can overdub and do things like that. Let's get to the comics.
Okay, so you are a DJ. All right.
I am a DJ. Yes. Black Summer.
Guys, now, you desperately wanted to talk about this series.
I do, because it snuck up on me. It was a comic that I had started collecting years ago. And what I do, I have a nasty habit of trying to complete a series before I read it. So if it takes 6 months for it to come out, I'll wait 6 months, then read them all at once. And I started to with 0 and 1, and I lost interest. Some financial things came up, so it was a title that I had to sacrifice and cut back on.
Mm-hmm.
But when I finally got cut up on things, and I got back to it, and I will say, I almost forgotten about this thing, being the Beast. I just never looked there. And the story, it took me by surprise. And I guess when I'm saying that is because when I first got 0 and 1, I was thinking, oh, this is kind of Watchmen-esque. And it had more of the feel of washed-up superheroes trying to come back from something that was lost. But yet, there seems to be more of an issue of how these guys can get back into society and be more accepted. But was that long-winded? And
No.
I'm very biased towards
it. No, I wanted you to have the chair on this one.
And I feel that right before we started this, Eris read, and just his expression was how I felt when I reread it, and it kind of like re-released to me. I thought it was very interesting.
I'll have to say, because, I had issues 0 through 6, I thought it ended at 6, and then I found out when I did Comixology, because I read end at 6, and I'm going, that can't be it! There's no way they're going to
end
like
that. Doesn't make any sense!
That's a cliffhanger and a half! I was pissed! And then I was like, okay, so I looked it up, and I'm like, oh, there's 8 total.
Yeah.
Including
the zero and then 7, yeah.
Right. So I had to cram in 7 real quick, folks, because Dirt decided we're going to cover it first, and I think that was a wise move.
Why is that a wise move?
Because there's a lot to talk about this one.
Okay.
And I want to make sure we kind of get it out of the way, because Absolution, we have a lot to talk about that. I know we do.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to start off with saying that in the beginning, I had more of the authority feel to it,
yeah.
To me.
Well, he wrote The Authority.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so. Yeah. And I think the art is really detailed in that sort of gritty way where it's not clean and crisp like we that seems to be kind of like what we always kind of lean towards. You know, we really like the kind of clean and crisp look. No, it's not, but it's highly detailed.
Hyper detailed.
Yes.
It's Jeff Darrow, if anyone's familiar with Jeff Darrow. It's kind of similar along those lines, which, for me, I actually don't care for it that much. With Jeff Darrow, I prefer it a little bit more because he had a tendency to fill a lot of his space with little interesting things happening in the background and whatever, whereas here it's just like there's an explosion and every wisp of,
look at issue 7 cover here. The rebar sticking out of the broken up concrete. It's like he took the time to fill in all the
he must do a lot of cocaine.
But
I'm joking.
I agree with you on
or
that.
Or has a French press
in one of the earlier issues when I can't remember the gentleman with the missing leg is in his apartment. And
Tom.
All the goons come and there was a couple of the cells that there was like way too much and it seemed. And we've talked about this being a curse and other things like Crossed and things like that. He draws well, but it's a lot to take in at once. And
I agree.
They're trying to say a lot of dialogue, but you're still drawn to this big page and a half of really coolness. But
like for me, part of my problem with it is that we talked about it a little bit when we talked about a lot of stuff going on in Swamp Thing, the way your eye is drawn through the page. And the problem is, he does so much detail that nothing really stands out as important in the frame.
It all looks important.
Right. It all has the same amount of detail.
And
I'm
really big on like fight scenes and how not only how the frames flow, but also when you see a punch being thrown, is it showing impact? Is it showing the result after the punch?
Right.
Or
showing the action as opposed to saying pow. Or you understand the feel.
Is it like this?
Right.
Or is it like
right.
And for people, this is an audio podcast, so that didn't help you at all. But it's the idea is the hand
in
the guy's face?
Or is it past the face?
Or is it more of an action shot where it's like, just a half second after it's occurred?
This was well done in that sense, but because of the super detailed art that he's showing here, in the battle scenes, it was too much.
Yeah.
Like especially
the attacks made sense to me. I could tell what was going on. You know, I think I talked about this last podcast, but it was like, you know, when you go to the mall and you like have to like stare really closely and then like something pops out at you.
It's a schooner.
Yes. Same thing.
No, you idiot, it's a sailboat.
But and I'm also really big on how the writer attaches how the words are attached to the art. And I think there's a great attachment here.
I just felt like especially issue, maybe it was 5, where it's pretty much the entire issue is a fight scene.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's just like one kind of pause in the middle where he's at the military camp.
Right.
And they're having a little bit of a conversation there. But otherwise, it's just the remaining 6 guns and the new 6 guns, and they're just, punching each other, going through walls, busting through the floor.
Right.
Stuff catching on fire. And it was like, through that entire thing, I just, that was another one of those situations where I felt like that could have been done in about 5 pages. And it just felt like they... There were too many, like we did a whole page or a 2-page spread. And like, what was the point? It was just to show an impact crater and a bunch of smoke coming out of it. But it looks cool in a 2-page spread. You know, and it's just like...
And I know how you love 2-page spreads.
Well, yeah. But, you know, you could have condensed the series down by a whole issue, you know, if they just kind of cut some of that stuff out.
I would like to give one other kudos to this. If I'm not normally into tying politics, current politics, into comics. But for me, it made a lot of sense with this. And it gave kind of some weight to the story, where there could have been some confusion.
I can hear you on that. Because I've felt the same way with the military presence. I know that we're all kind of weird fans of A God Somewhere, and how the military was more after wanting it to be more of like a... and wanting him to be more of a machine or a weapon to be used for. It seemed as if the military was trying to defend itself. And they were just saying, hey, look, and spoiler alert, moving forward, that Tom commits suicide pretty much by letting the tank destroy him. And so he had this master plan. Once again, I know that's not kind of Watchmen-esque, but yet at the same token, it brings the flavor of that character. He's wanting to die. He was in solitude. He felt bad because he had a bone leg, and so what, he's just going to sit around and drink alcohol all day and just waste his life away. And he did it in such a way to impact all these people and everyone else's perspective.
Did both of you actually believe that he hadn't faked his own death?
I knew something was up. I knew that when he got shot by the tank, that wasn't going to be it.
Because as soon as they were like, oh man, he was pink misted, there's absolutely nothing left, I'm like, he's not dead.
Right. I mean,
obviously he's not. You
but
don't have...
They everyone was led to believe that because he sat around in solitude. And
well, they did that clever comic book trick where it's like, okay, he's dead, moving on to the next thing. You know, like,
they didn't spend any time on it. The story just kind of, like, you know. And so it's like, okay, well, obviously that didn't just happen. He faked it somehow or, you know,
so,
did something...
I've been dying to ask you, Dan, because this is, you put ownership on this and how much you like it. I want to know, what do you think was behind the whole King Kong thing? Because it's referred to, like, 4 times in this
series.
You
know, I caught that, but I am very unaware. I mean,
Well, John Horace makes a reference to it when he's standing on top of...
you're talking about just the idea of being King Kong versus being a giant
being
ape.
Being the giant monster against the corporate,
Well, no, but I mean, the idea is that King Kong was a misunderstood monster. As opposed to, like, you watch some of the Godzilla movies, and it just seems like...
Someone does
a test underground and it pisses off Godzilla, and he comes up, and so they just they have to shoot him with a bunch of tanks, blow him away, try to find the mech ray to make him go back in the ocean and leave him alone. You know, that's what a lot of Godzillas are. Whereas King Kong is like, he comes out, he's forced out of the jungle, he's put on parade, he gets hissed off. The one thing that he kind of has a thing for is this woman, and he just kind of freaks out and grabs her. Climbs on this building trying to get away from everybody, and the planes come and start shooting at him, and he's batting at him because he doesn't understand, like, just leave me alone, just go away.
Well, John Horace makes a reference where he's like, basically that he's expecting the planes to come.
Right, because the idea is...
And they do over the Appalachian Mountains later.
But the idea is that he sees himself as King Kong. He's trying to save the one thing he loves, and in this case, it's America versus King Kong being in love with Fay Wray, whatever her character name was in King Kong. But everyone else sees him as just the giant monkey on top of the Empire State Building, punching at planes. He's a nuisance, he's out of control, they just gotta kinda come stop him, whereas he's just, he's doing what he just knows to do. This is the only option that he's seen is to just kinda lash out like this, just like King Kong just gets kinda pissed off and lashes out. Just tries to, get the hell out of it.
Well, another thing I wanna talk about is, because I just read this one recently, so it's fresh in my mind, is the guy that invented all the guns for him, what was his name, Franklin, or... Start with an F.
For what?
He kind of helped invent all the guns.
Oh, you mean in Black Summer?
Yes, in Black Summer.
And you mean created the...
Yes.
They're the six guns, they're specialized
was it Franklin,
guns.
Was that his name? Anyways.
No, Frank. It was Frank...
It was Frank.
Frank Blackthorn.
I was expecting more of a twist with him. Yeah. I was hoping that in the end he was going to be how the mastermind. And at one point I was like, okay, something really crazy.
Too fast and too easy. Like.
Well, he just kind of disappears, and then you briefly see him again, and then he just shows up again at the end.
Well, and also the fact that they all thought he was dead.
Well, yeah, but that's just a government spy spook thing.
Sure, but I thought they could have spinned off on that and taken his. Actually, he's the mastermind behind all the chaos, you know, and
well, no,
he's been treating everybody like puppets.
Because, see, his deal is that he had been their handler. He had been, like, their government handler, and they faked his death so that he could go into hiding, so that he could find a way to destroy them should they ever turn against...
But he was the one that realized first that John was, first of all, should have never had the eyeball power, you know.
Well, because he didn't...
Because he was most unstable.
Didn't John create the technology himself?
He
wouldn't
did,
share
and
it with
he
anybody?
Wouldn't share it. Yeah,
yeah. But that they were kind of like the team that he made, where they're all linked together. And that was another thing when I was first reading it. I thought that might have been a hokey kind of.
It was kind of vague.
Maybe, yeah, you know, they're all plugged together, but yet you could see where it eventually worked for some pros and some cons of different. You know, Dominic, of course,
couldn't open that door. Remember, Dominic's like, "Oh, yeah. I can't open there." He's, "Oh, there, I got it."
Yeah.
It's like, but there wasn't much talk about it.
Right.
So if you're going to, like... All right, folks, if you're going to write and draw a comic book, you're going to introduce a superpower, there should be some depth as to why that superpower exists, other than, oh, I don't think I could open that door.
Well, I mean...
Oh, I got it. What open the door now. It's like,
I mean,
okay, was that even necessary?
Well, if
I mean, they
could
have just had Dominic walk up to the door and just, like, rip it off, and I would have been like, oh, that
there's,
makes sense.
I think
he's
there's
a
letter...
The door
I think it's the end of the first issue and not the zero, but Warren Ellis wrote some letter about how, you know, he wanted to do this with, like, Marvel or DC characters. He's watching Civil War happening in Marvel, and he's like, you know, there's really nothing going on. They're calling this thing a big Civil War, and it's something he wanted to do with established characters... You know, and you know, no company would ever let him do it or whatever, so he just kind of had to make a new world. Once he made up a new world and new characters, then he realized now he had a freer reign to do whatever he wanted with them. If he wanted him to die, he could just kill him off, you know, whatever. So he just kind of went into this story like it's... Like, you should already be familiar with these characters. You should already kind of know the universe. Which, I mean, on the one hand, it's like, okay, you don't have to spend a whole lot of time setting stuff up and... going into backgrounds,
yeah.
So you can more tell your story, but at the same time, you're not going into backgrounds. You're not.
I will say though,
doing more set because I want more history.
That is kind of a thing though with Avatar. You get that a lot of times with Ignition City and even Absolution. You know, some of these that will.
Yeah, but Ignition City, that's also Warren Ellis, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I mean,
you get thrown into,
but that could be a writer.
I will say one thing:
characters,
floating eyeballs. That did kind of bother me.
Did they ever really explain what the eyeballs did?
No.
It's one of them damaged and then...
Blows up and there's like
an
atomic blast.
And the other characters seemed more realistic. Very strong feminine roles in here,
yeah.
If you guys noticed.
Angela. Oh.
Well, except I kind of felt like...
my bedroom window.
You've got... You've just got this woman who, for like no reason, is just...
I'm the Tooth Fairy!
She's cold... There's one woman who's just cold to everybody and pissed off at everybody and is mean to everybody. And
is
then
that
got,
Jen or Jen?
I don't know. And then
the blonde chick
can't get along with anybody. And then you've got the other chick who's just like,
there she is.
She's like, I never want to deal with you again, but here I am. Why are we so ill forever linked? And it's like, what? Shut up.
Dominic's role, it kind of setting up, and like you've said, getting to know some of the characters that were just made from scratch and to get into trying to understand them. But Dominic, I thought, would be a juggernaut or something impervial, and to have him go the way he did, and actually you were mentioning it earlier, like that, it was just page after page of explosions, and you know, it was,
right.
I don't know if that was meant to be more impactful because you thought he was going to be more of a survivor, and he wasn't, or...
Yeah, it was one of those things, like, until you said that, I had actually forgotten that he was dead. It meant so little to the story. Because once... Well,
this is a total spoiler.
2007
yeah.
series.
Yeah,
right. You know, no big deal. But, you know, his death was so unimpactful to the story that you say that, and I go, oh, yeah, that's right, he didn't survive to the end. But it really didn't make a difference. His death meant nothing, and if he had lived, it wouldn't have meant anything either. He was there for a while, and then he wasn't. And it just didn't matter.
I'll agree. I agree with you. Dominic was my least favorite. My favorite was Tom. You know, Tripod.
Eh.
I liked him. I thought his character had the most depth. They spent more time with backstory with him than...
Yeah, that may be, but at the same time, that's like saying, hey, we gave you a Dixie cup full of soda, not a thimble full of soda.
I like this chick.
That's Angela.
Angela? I was looking for her name.
I just really felt on the whole... I didn't really care about any of the characters, really. It was just kind of one of those things that, you know... I mean, once it was over, I'm just like, well, it's over. I didn't really care. Like, if any of them had died, I don't think I would have been bothered, really. And here's the other problem I have with the story, is that there's no protagonist you relate to who pulls you through the story. Like, there's really nothing in there where I think, oh, well, I like this person, and I kind of identify with them. Like, everybody in this story, I'm just kind of like, you know, okay, whatever. Like, if they die... To me, it felt like B-movie characters.
I was more interested in the destruction that was going to happen at the end than I was who was the ultimate protagonist. I had this feeling when I was reading this from the beginning that at the end there was going to be this just massive...
Everything would blow up.
Yes. And I was more excited to see... And obviously, I mean, that was what they were pushing in the artwork.
Yeah.
It was utter chaos and destruction, you know. So, I mean, I was more... kind of interested in the apocalypse of it.
Oh, wow. The apocalypse.
Than I was any... Because, like I said earlier, it was kind of confusing as to who was the ultimate protagonist.
Well, and that's the other thing. If Tom is your main protagonist in the story, he's the one that you're supposed to kind of relate to a little bit more because he doesn't really have a side in the argument other than this whole thing is screwed up. You know what I mean? And so for a lot of people, they don't really pick one side or another. They're just like, everybody's crazy. You know, and so he's supposed to be your main protagonist throughout the story, and he disappears in like issue 2, and he doesn't come back until like the final 4 pages. So it's just like if this is your main guy, this is your everyman that you relate to, he's gone through most of the story, and then you just have these other people you don't care about.
That's what I think was the main setup of the story is. You know, you think your protagonist is going to be there, but maybe he dies off early, and you get the drama. You get
but when that happens, though,
and that's when they explain their backstory. Yeah, pretty much.
The shift at that point is supposed to show you who the true protagonist is, and you don't get anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, Julius Caesar, Shakespeare's Caesar. Caesar dies early on in William Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, because it's really the story of Mark Antony. But if he said, hey, I made a new play, I called it Mark Antony, no one's going to go watch it. But you make a play, you call it Julius Caesar, and everybody shows up to watch it. So it's like, okay, you have Tom, and Tom's your, you know, your main guy, and he's the drunk, he's worthless. Oh, look, he's still active, he's still powerful, he can still kick this guy's ass. And then, oh, I think he's dead. And then who's the new person who emerges who's... Is there anybody avenging Tom? Is there anybody filling his whole, like, no, it's just kind of...
Yeah, you have Frank,
you just have these other random
characters.
You have
Frank that's doing his weird thing and trying to, like, kill him.
Yeah, but Frank only shows up, you know, at the beginning, a little bit in the middle, at the end. He's not even there through most of the story.
I enjoy Warren Ellis's writing very much so.
I'm on Dan's side on this
one. It is one of those that it is dramatic, but yeah, I can pick it apart, but I can build it back up again. And I will be so very hypocritical of this, because it's one time I love the artwork, but another time it takes my eyes away from what I should be reading,
sure.
Or vice versa. And it's, once again, I really enjoy Warren Ellis's writing.
Well, that's one other thing. I just got to say this real quick.
Yeah.
One other thing about Warren Ellis that sometimes pisses me off. And you're on page 5, and you read page 5, and you flip to read page 6, and suddenly there's a novel sitting in front of you. And you're like, wait a minute, I thought I was reading a comic book where the visuals meant something, but instead you've got like 2 pages of word balloons with just like a little amount of people peeking through the word balloons, you know, where it's like, can we do less than 900 words per page, please? Like, I don't know if it gets paid by the word or what the deal is, but it's like, you know, there's just some times where it's like, I just turn the page. Maybe because I'm lazy and I hate reading, I don't know, but, you know, it's like, I flip and I look at the page and I'm just like, oh, man, this is homework.
Well, it's funny because you guys were sitting around waiting for me to finish reading issue 7, and every page I'm turning, it's like...
Yeah, because there's a lot of exposition.
Yeah.
It's like,
right.
Okay, this is the last issue, we got to explain everything. All right, everybody, let's get it out there. So anyway, like, I can understand why people would like it. But I necessarily am not a fan. I just think there's some big problems with the plot, and I just thought the artwork was too distracting overall. But I don't begrudge somebody for thinking it's a cool story.
I liked it. I enjoyed it very much. I give it a big thumbs up, whatever we can say to it, because it is a good read.
Is it two snaps up in a circle?
That's true. And if you guys find it anywhere, like at a show or anywhere in a bundle, highly recommend picking
all it up. All trades, $5. $5, all trades.
But enjoyed.
It picked up for me around issue 3. Between 2 and 3, I was like, okay, this is getting a little too political, and I didn't know if I was going to really attach myself to the characters, but then I did. So I agree. I think it was a good read. I read it in about a day and a half because it did catch me. Like, I was ready to read the next issue.
Did they ever say what city it was all these people were from? Because there's five or six times they're like, you stay out of our city. Get out of our city. We're here to protect our city.
It
seems kind of
like
New York. City, is it?
I said earlier, it looked like he was standing on the Chrysler Building when he did that whole King Kong speech.
Yeah, but you didn't see, like, the Statue of Liberty. It's going to be New York. You're going to see the Brooklyn Bridge or the Statue of Liberty. They're going to throw him in there. And this was just more... It was just kind of like...
Good call, man.
Get out of our city! We're here to save our city! I'm like, what city is this?
Well, like it or not, you have to agree that there was a lot to talk about with these issues. There was a lot of depth in there, I think.
There's a lot of conversation that can come from the series. So. Alright. Well, the furnace is finally kicked off, so we don't have all that background
sorry,
noise.
Folks.
But, of course, now time for a commercial break. So, hopefully when we come back from commercial, we'll kick back on and we can all yell over it again.
See ya.
You're not going to say anything to lead us out to commercial? Aw, you look kind of sad. All right, we'll be right back.
You're listening to a podcast on PopCultureNetwork.com. Be sure to head on over to the site at www.PopCultureNetwork.com to check out more podcasts and videos featuring toys, comic books, video games, and all the things you love. And while you're there, be sure to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you purchase helps to keep us producing. Just head over to PopCultureNetwork.com and click on store.
All right, welcome back to the show. My name is Mr. Meat. I'm joined by Mr. Cheese.
Mayor McCheese.
And sitting over here in the chair is the Sausage King of Chicago, Abe Froman. Abe, how you feeling?
Abe Froman.
Abe! I'm doing good.
Hey, everybody. DJ House here.
And now that we're back from the commercial break, we're going to talk about a different Avatar property on our All-Avatar special. This is the show about Avatar, where we're talking Avatar.
Avatar.
And just for the Avatar sake, Avatar. We're going to talk now about the New Lady Death series. We've had a preview issue, what was that called? The premiere issue?
Premiere issue.
And then now we have a Zero that has come out. This is setting up the new series. And first of all, anybody here familiar with Lady Death?
She's been around a while, hasn't
right,
she?
Right, yeah, since the early 90s.
Okay, because I was going to say, I saw some 97 stuff online. Yeah.
And, but I mean, nobody read Lady Death before.
No, was it like one of those things where it was like kind of in spurts, where like it was successful for a while, then it died off, then successful, then died off?
Well, yeah, it was independently published, so it just kind of first kind of came out, and then it languished a little bit, and then everybody started buying it, so suddenly the guy had a lot of money, so he, you know, just started printing a lot more, and then in the late 90s, when comics kind of imploded, then he kind of disappeared for a while, and then... You know, it kind of reemerged again, and it's
what, okay. When that comic industry did implode, what time frame was that around? Like, what would you give like a?
Oh well, about the time Marvel was bankrupt. What was that? 98. That Marvel went bankrupt because Marvel had to file for bankruptcy.
Was it now?
Was that 98?
Yeah, I mean, okay, 97, 98. I'm trying to think, because I remember time frame-wise in Amazing Spider-Man, because it was, like, really hokey. Wasn't it, like, the 400s? They were giving out, like, packs of Kool-Aids or something with it. Like, it had, like, a free incentive.
Well, I just remember that It was they had bought like Toy Biz,
yeah,
or Toy Biz bought Marvel. I don't remember exactly how that worked, but suddenly they were part comic book company, part toy company,
huh.
And then they. I don't know if they, like, branched out too much trying to do all those Fox animated cartoons and if they invested too much in that or something. And
so, bottom line is Lady Death's been passed around.
What was that?
So, bleep, bleep.
I just want to say I wasn't really all that familiar with the character. I just kind of knew of her. It was originally Chaos Comics.
So do you have some backstory?
With
you,
Evil
you're
Ernie.
The one who brought this
out. No. It was actually just one of those things where Avatar started this new imprint called Boundless,
mm-hmm.
and Lady Death is part of Boundless, and so they had that premiere that they gave away at, I think, Wizard World Chicago last year and a bunch of other, you know, cons.
Probably actually one of the only booths I was really drawn to, besides Avatar.
Yeah, well, there was nothing else at Wizard World.
Well, I don't know.
Was a
I don't remember which guy
show.
It was here, but one of these guys was at his table pushing Lady Death, and he's really friendly, really approachable guy.
I think Brian Peluto was there.
He had long hair.
Kind of like ramen noodles kind of looking? Yeah.
Ramen noodles.
Okay. Yeah. So I got to meet him. He was a really nice guy, and he was, you know, easy to talk to. And,
right.
So that's what drew me to. I was like, oh, well, I'm going to read this. So let me tell you that, writers and artists, if you're out there and you're in your booths, you know, the friendlier you are, I think, the better reception you're going to get.
Right.
You know?
Well, I mean, there are just some guys who are meek and mild and are just kind of uncomfortable being in public anyway.
Then you don't have to, you don't, I mean, yeah, do they well, make them go then? I mean,
yeah, well, like the guy who created the Hellboy,
yeah.
he is very, I don't want to say introverted necessarily, but he's one of those people where you give him compliments and he becomes very shy. And it's not just like fans. It's like if he's sitting on a panel and someone's like, you know, I think your artwork in Hellboy is really cool. And he'll just be like, ah, you know, thanks. I just draw, you know.
And
just,
sometimes I like know. To cry.
Just kind of just humble, you know, humble, I guess, is a good way to put it. So there's some guys that are just not like, but then there are the other guys that are like, hey, how's it going? My name's Bob. This is my new book. You want to read my comic? This is great. You should read it. That's $4. You know what I mean? You're just like,
I'll sign it for 10.
Oh, well, that makes it worth it.
Seriously, so you guys have never read this before this one? Okay, because I did read the Zero One, the premiere, the free one that came out.
Right.
And well, yeah, I read that. And
then I read this one. And guys, it's cool, but I don't know where it's going, and I don't know if it's something I'm going to be, I don't know.
I do not plan on collecting this one. I'll tell you, it was a little... It's a cross between...
Sometimes the Dark Ages are just
it's,
like,
well, it's a cross between heavy metal and Evil Dead. Is what is like the...
No, you know what I thought of? No, you know what I thought of? Was the Dungeons & Dragons cartoon from the 80s.
Huh.
Like those guys who get sucked... It's the Dungeons & Dragons ride! And then they get on it and they find themselves like... where Dungeons & Dragons is real, you know, and whatever. To me, that's what it felt like because it's like... It's the Middle Ages, but this guy has two giant buzzsaw shields on his arms.
Right.
You know.
I think when we were just last talking about where it was like way too much, there was not enough. It was... Every cell was a lot of dialogue and like one action going on. Like you said, guy with these big buzz arm shields... And it's just like, okay, and he says a whole bunch of sentences as he's cutting off these hits. Okay, it's neat, but I don't know. I just...
The frames do not work.
No.
It doesn't flow as well.
No. And remember I was talking about the fight scenes, how I'm really big on fight scenes? Really bizarre. Like, I can't tell what's going on here. All right, there's a guy with a half a head on.
Let me see. All right, so... So that guy's coming to swipe at him, and he's cutting that guy's arm off, and then he's swinging back around and cutting that guy's head off.
Not so much how he's cutting his arm off, but it doesn't look right. It doesn't look...
Yeah, you're right, because the blade is coming left to right, and the arm is...
So he's got, like, a really super strong swing.
He's cutting with the backside of the sword. Yeah. That's how powerful he is.
Yeah, he only needs, like, 6 inches of space to swing that sword and chop the guy's arm off.
Thus
you know what I'm saying? It doesn't...
But, I mean, I took it very much as B-movie...
Oh, I forgot. There's a
Stargate. Yes, there's a Stargate right there.
Page one.
Between the two...
Enter Stargate
Dungeons
& Dragons.
Captivated me a little bit more than the first one. The first one was just... I don't know. The whole amnesia plot sometimes doesn't, like, work too well where somebody...
Well, and especially because it's like...
Time-traveling, too.
She got amnesia in the premiere... last issue, and then her memory is coming back at the end of this Zero issue.
Right.
So it's like, we did this whole amnesia subplot for two issues.
So what's with the whole, like, just one up and different things?
Well, that was another thing. Like, they're running around the Middle Ages, and she's wearing, like, this little bustier.
Yeah.
These little pirate pants. You know? There's... I swear there's some guy wearing a wife beater in one of these the backgrounds. And then of course, you've got, like, these guys who are, like, the Renaissance Fair.
Yeah.
Right? You know, middle-aged guys. I think this is supposed to be, like, 13.
That was a good call you had there. Look
How about the...
Look at that guy. That looks like Gandalf.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's... Like I said, I didn't read this expecting it to be... You know, like, the super realistic... you know, I took it as a B-movie. Like, I sat down the same way I would sit down to watch, you know, some straight-to-DVD horror movie, you know, was kind of the idea. Maybe, if that's not a compliment, you know, it's meant to be. I just looked at it as something fun.
Yeah.
And for something fun that I wasn't taking too seriously. Now, to be fair, it is a $4 comic book. And so when you're talking, you know, a $4 comic, maybe your expectations should be a little bit higher.
Yeah.
Because it's not, you know, it's not 2 1/4 that you're just kind of throwing on something.
I felt that...
Just take a gas.
We should have known something about her, and I did not know it. Unlike the last one where they were trying to build up the character base, this one seems more...
Maybe it's because you don't remember, because Lady Death doesn't remember.
Very true. I don't know.
They want you to feel for the character. It's like I have an. It's like you're reading this and you have amnesia.
I'm sorry.
She's a hot white.
Yeah, now the artwork. I do want to say the artwork is really good.
And there's some, like, simple artwork in there that's nice because it's not as if it's. But
see,
once again, there's
the
some dialogue
good.
Sometimes with not enough of action shots, and you need to see a little bit more. Compared to a lot of bubbles and clouds.
I mean, I understand...
Like, no, like, right here. This frame right here threw me off.
Well, where's that
guy's
legs?
Where's his torso?
Yeah. he just disappears right at the swipe.
What, did the guy fall asleep when he was drawing that frame? I guess I'm getting harsh. But, you know, that's how I felt about that frame.
It's definitely... I want to say, I do like... I mean, like, the way he does detail on the faces, and the way he's got, like, the different tones. It's almost like... Like a pencil shading, and the pencils got colored, so it has like this soft tone effect to it, which I find very interesting. What?
That skull.
Oh yeah, the guy getting his head cut off.
It's drawn well, but it's a lot sometimes. And I don't know. It's good, but I don't know. I just can't grab that story, guys. And I'm not into modern.
This is the modern.
Dark Ages. Whatever,
one of those times when you're a critic and you have to just suck it up and realize that, you know, sometimes you kind of have to pin the tail on the donkey on this one. I did not like this.
So this time we got one out of three who enjoyed this more than they disliked it, whereas the last one it was 2 out of 3.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So we'll put this one back.
But I know, you know, Lady Death fans, of course, are going to be
picking
it up anyway.
Throw the fish back into the water.
No offense, Lady Death. It's a girl, and I'm sure if you have the history of it and being back in the time frame that you were talking earlier, Dirt, that, what are you saying, late 90s? And I'm sorry, guys, this is my first one, so maybe I'm missing something. If, you know, there's more of something I should be looking at, suggest it. But if not, I don't really think Lady Death is a good story.
No.
It must
have been like a giant white squirrel with purple hair.
But I can tell by the look on your face, like you didn't want to say that. It was like, this is harsh reality.
Yeah,
I didn't like this comic book.
I read it and I liked this, the first one. I thought, oh, this is kind of going somewhere pretty neat, or the preview one that we had for free. And then the first one just the story.
Well,
was
this is
harsh
still a zero.
Of,
this is still a zero.
Yeah.
So, I mean, technically, it doesn't start for another issue.
It's like, we're going to show you how this really sucks for, like, 2 issues. And then we're going to really hit it home.
Okay, that's a little too harsh.
Yeah, it is.
That's a little too harsh. Now it's time to bring it back.
All right, okay.
Well, I guess that's going to do it then for Lady Death. So we're going to take a quick break right here to eat some of these crispy Ridges chips. And then we'll be coming back to talk about Absolution. Right?
Yes.
Is that what
yes.
we're doing?
I'm excited.
That was a question I was asking.
Yes. Yes.
PB Army.
I'm answering. All
right. Be right back.
My name is Sween Hollick, and if you're into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, have I got a column for you. Go over to popculturenetwork.com and take a look at Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, where each and every week we meander down memory lane as I review classic figures from the original Playmates Ninja Turtle toy line. Whether you're a longtime follower of the Fab Four or just getting into the Green Teens, I don't think you'll be disappointed. That's Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you can only find it at popculturenetwork.com.
Check out www.lockerroomhq.com for the rest of our exciting podcasts about sports talk and pro wrestling. And don't forget the rest of www.popculturenetwork.com for everything else from toys to comic books and video games and everything else you love. It's www.popculturenetwork.com.
Hey guys, I'm Rob Bass. I host a show called Comic Nation TV, where the world of comic books and complete fandom collide. We have great reviews by Pop Culture Network's very own Dirt and Comics Corner's reviewer Ryan Porter, along with our newest member Juan Pineda, who hosts The Art of Comics. So if you guys love comics, hope you check out our show, only on The Pop.
And don't forget to check out the Pop Culture Network store, where everything you buy helps to keep us on the air. That's www.popculturenetwork.com.
All right, everybody, welcome back. This is episode 6, Comaholics, segment number 3. And here in segment number 3, we're here to talk about Absolution from Avatar. And this is one this is my request to put in this series. I love this series, but I wonder what you guys have to think about it. So, give me that apocalyptic look.
Oh, we were talking about the smell of the comic books earlier. I want to get back to the smell.
You just want to get back to the smell of Avatar's paper and...
Well, it's like an accordion. It's not the sound that the accordion makes. It's the smell of the air coming out of it.
I don't think that's true. I think accordion players would disagree with you.
That was a Frank Zappa reference, but... no.
I just like talking about accordions.
Okay. just one thing to point out about Avatar comic books...
But they have 12 covers on every issue?
Yeah, which is great.
I love collecting them all.
No, just the quality of the books.
Yeah. Yeah, they do run $4, you know, when most of your basic comics run $3 nowadays. Mm-hmm. But it is very slick, high-quality paper. The cover is a little thicker. It's going to stand the test of time a little longer. You can reread it, you know, several times without having to worry about it falling apart, like a lot of the... You know, Marvel, DC, basic books that you get nowadays. So, yeah, they do do a lot of high-quality printing.
Well, as you know, I'm kind of a newbie.
Yeah?
And when I went to C2E2, I went to Avatar Table, and I met Christos Gage.
Right.
And he was very approachable, easy guy to talk to. In fact, he started talking about... some work he had done writing for, I think, SVU or something like that. CSI, one of those two.
Right.
And I asked him if, like, this was an ongoing series, and he said that there was something in the works, but...
Right, he wants to do a second series, but this series really didn't sell as high as they hoped, and... You know, I'm hoping more people will check it out. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was great.
But anyway, so let's talk a little bit about the story. Go ahead.
I loved every minute of it. There was a big hesitation I had up until the 5th issue that came out, and it seemed as if we were always going to be in his mind, and it seemed to take the drastic turn at the end. And I don't know. I loved it.
All right. Okay. This is the story of a cop. Mm-hmm. He's
another cop story.
Enhancile, I think they call him. Mm-hmm. He has, you know, superpowers, and so he works for the police force. There's, like, a group, like, each in the police department. Like, they have detectives, and they have the patrol officers. They also have their superheroes on the squads. So he's one of the superheroes on the squad, and he's seen a lot of bad things during his days as a police officer, and it gets to him.
He's a good cop gone bad.
It eventually gets to the point where he decides that there are just some times when the law doesn't work. So he decides to take it into his own hands, and So he's a crime fighter by day and a vigilante crime fighter by night, basically. And so he's living like this dual life where, after hours, he just goes out and uses lethal force to...
his moonlighting.
To take care of criminals. And so he kind of has this... I don't know if you want to say it's like a dual personality, dual life that
well,
he's doing.
Well, there's a point where it's a tipping point. In it, you know, while he's on the job, and yeah, you know, we're full of spoilers on this show.
Well, so. I mean, this is a series that's 2 years old.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it was over when we went to C2E2 last year, and that was almost a year ago. So, I think we're safe spoiling some of the stuff that happens in the storyline. But he basically, you know, he starts just killing serial killers and rapists and pedophiles, and it gets to a point where he kind of gets a little carried away, and, you know, an abusive husband, and you know, the bad guys find out about it, and they start using it to blackmail him, and...
One thing that really tripped me out about this story, Dirt and Apocalypse, is that there is kind of the sub-story of the Hello Kitty girl, and it was kind of an over thing.
I know,
that,
I was trying to
really
find out
my attention, and so that... next
Happy Kitty.
Yeah.
And his abilities, and once again, the way it was written is very well, but you get the sense of where is this guy going with his powers? Is he trying to avenge some like unrestly soul within him? And there's weird parts where he has demented dreams and sexual...
Yeah, well, like he's having sex with his girlfriend and he starts seeing the victims.
Yeah,
and
just, it gets... But yeah, at the same time, you get emotion for this gentleman. One was the guy who could invent certain powers.
The technocrat?
Yes.
Technocrat.
The way he dies is... It's one of those that when I first thought, I was just like, yeah,
that was
like,
anticlimactic.
But yeah, if you think
that
about
was
it...
anticlimactic.
He said, there's nowhere in the room that, you know, you could... If you immense your powers... These things will shoot at you at first glance. So he did it within him, knowing that those things are programmed not to shoot him. And I thought, wow. He has a very, like, you know...
Right.
That way, yeah.
Basically, he makes his power manifest within the bad guy so that the bad guy's security system kills the bad guy.
Right.
Because they see the powers there,
right.
Not on him as the hero. So, yeah, he does cause the death of a villain that way, which was... Yeah, it took me...
But the first time
I read that, it didn't make sense to me. I'm like, did he make spikes? Like, did he make his power make spikes
pop
out of this guy? And then I realized, oh, those were the safety things shooting through trying to kill him.
And he became very technical, and we kind of rapped about this a little bit before the show, and I hate to use this term, but kind of Dexter-esque, kind of a little bit.
Right.
But I still, at the same time, very compelling.
Well, you have a very intelligent individual who is the super criminal, also the good guy.
Right. And you feel for
which
him.
Which is a lot
really
like Dexter.
The difference is Dexter, obviously, is a psychopath, serial killer.
But the base
who gets
of
pushed to the right.
The hero slash...
Right. I mean, he works for the police force, and he does use lethal means in order to protect the general public. But at the same time, it's almost like a Dirty Harry thing in a way.
It is, that very cliché-ish where he goes out at night because he couldn't sleep and all that.
Stumbles
blah, blah, blah,
into
blah,
something and kills the guy. Yeah.
That, but yeah, that also kind of kept me captivated because I'm thinking, well, that's the old Copper show that someone would listen to on the radio that I'm seeing come alive on this night. Avatar. And everything. it was... I do like the powers, and we had mentioned this in a few issues back, that it was thrown at you in a way that you hadn't, you think you know the powers, but as they talk about them, you understand the heroes. One of those like long song heroes that you said couldn't be printed, and Marvel, maybe Marvel or DC would say, no, don't print that. So then Christoph Gage is more along the lines of thinking, hey, you know, I'll do it with a company like Avatar, we'll... just make up our own heroes and throw you kind of like into the story. And the one was that preacher.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, but
I don't want to say it bothered me, but it made me think that's kind of different to throw, you know, powers of Almighty, but he's more just like defending and blocking more than he's doing anything. But yeah, that did bring a shock to me. And then there was the two...
But that's the type of superhero you wouldn't see in the mainstream?
I don't want to say, but it was still... It was one of those... It was the gleaming light and darkness of this guy's path and vision. And I see that, but yet it was neat to me in the aspect that it was a religious figure, but yet it seemed like he went through a lot of turmoil in the book, and he stood up to boundaries and things that you wouldn't expect a comic book to print of a religious figure with.
What do you mean?
Marvel wouldn't really put in a preach.
Well, no, but I mean, like, what is it about him that you think that a mainstream publisher wouldn't deal with?
Just religious values. You know, a lot of people are,
DC did Preacher.
Yeah, but that was that Vertigo? Or?
That was Vertigo, yeah.
Okay, and so, you know, it's a little bit more edgier, and we've seen that, like, unfold in Sandman and a lot of those things, which they do it in such a classic way or a good, clean way that doesn't really hurt, but it does kind of test what you may have been taught in CCD or wherever, you know, and yet I guess those are more like comic values. I don't know.
What's CCD?
Religious class.
Oh, okay.
I was Catholic.
I thought you were going for Creedence Clearwater Revival there for a second. I was confused. The last letter was wrong.
It's not that it bothered me that bad that we have to go in this far into the conversation with, but yeah, it was neat that it was there. The other two superheroes, and really his overall power in his friend, the woman that was like impermeable to pretty much anything.
Alpha.
Yeah. Bringing her husband into the equation, that was different because he was like an outside source that all these others have like powers and yada yada yada. And this was a human with no... I mean, he couldn't defend himself, and yet he's like burning in the fire in one of the cells, and yet she's sitting there getting like not touched or burned or anything.
The house is on fire, the husband's dying, she's got superpowers, runs
dramatic.
In to save the
know.
Husband, and he's basically burning in her arms.
I love
she
the
can't
story.
Save him, she can't hurt either, right. So... Yeah, I do like the cast of characters. There's also the guy whose name we can't actually say on this podcast, but his body can get ripped apart and it heals itself. Cluster is the first part of his name.
Oh, yeah.
And at first I thought that was just like that was a nickname or something they were giving him, but apparently that was his superhero name because it pops up again later when they're talking about him. And it's like, yeah, that's a superhero name. He's a cluster. And basically he can be torn apart and his body will just kind of mend itself and come back together, so he can't die. There's a guy who shoots little steel balls, ball bearings,
right.
Around. There's the guy John Dusk, who is the hero of the book. He's got some kind of like, almost like a Green Lantern power that emanates from his body, where it kind of
an aura.
Yeah, it's just kind of like this force field that just
kind
of manipulates
about Alpha.
Around. Well, we just talked about Alpha a minute ago.
Yeah,
talking about being impervious.
It's good.
I like the characters.
I eat it up
like
100%. I love everything about it. We were talking artwork earlier and how it flows within like the cells or the actual pages. This does really well. There are a few, but less than a handful of some of those couple. Well, I think every issue has like a 2-page spread of one descriptive. But yeah. It's very easy on the eyes. Story, excellent.
I thought the artwork had kind of that classic comic book feel to it. You know, this was one of the first titles from Avatar I actually sat down and read, you know, the entire series. And I was familiar... Well, okay, I'll take that back. This is one of the first titles from Avatar that wasn't like Friday the 13th or Nightmare on Elm Street when they were doing all those books. This is the first thing that... You know, it had that kind of familiar style, where you've read a lot of DC, Marvel, you know, it's that clean, you can't really, like, pick out the guy's style.
Yeah.
It's not like like a Todd McFarlane or a Rob Liefeld, where you see the artwork and you instantly know who it is. It's a little more, you know, I have to say, I don't want to say generic. I think general is a better term for it. It doesn't stand out as being too hyper-stylized in any particular way. It's just it's a very clean, very...
Complete opposite of Black Summer.
Right, right. Where, you know, you would see the artwork from Black Summer and you'd know instantly, oh, it's that guy. Whereas this artwork, you'd see it, you wouldn't necessarily be able to pick out, say, a guy who works on Cross versus you know, this necessarily. If you saw them side by side, obviously you could tell one from the other, but not, you know, paying that much attention, it doesn't stick out to you as being... And to me, I like that because it's like the artwork didn't pull away from the story. I wasn't watching, you know, guys twisted in weird anatomy because they had to draw it to look really cool. It just, it played out like very realistic style, and I really enjoyed how it just flowed very well throughout the story.
One thing I was disappointed, though, with was the ending.
The ending?
Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I liked it.
I loved it. I loved the ending.
That's what got me the best.
I'll tell you why it disappointed me, because I know there's not going to be more.
Well, but it leaves it open for more. And maybe in, you know, a couple of years, he'll get the opportunity to do a second series. I mean, what part? The ending, how it's just kind of open with him putting on his Bruce Banner backpack and walking off down the street. He gets in a really bad situation there for a while, and you don't think he's going to survive, and... you know, it looks like he's in his Empire Strikes Back moment, where it's as bad as it could possibly be. But then he makes it out.
The guy at the 7-Eleven gives him
the food for free.
Basket of food, yeah.
So,
but no, actually, the part I did like about the ending though was right when he meets Happy Kitty, and he decides, you know, he makes an loud statement that will not be me, you know.
Yeah, well, because she wants to basically be friends, mm-hmm. was the idea. She wants to work with him. And he just basically says no. You know, he's like, I have standards that I, you know, adhere to, where she just likes to go out and kill people because she just likes to go out and kill people. Yeah. And so, but there's...
But you never see her face.
No, you don't. But one thing I wanted to bring up, though, was Absolution versus Black Summer... is with Absolution, you have a very clear central character. He is your everyman. He's very identifiable. Mm-hmm. You may not agree necessarily with going out and killing people instead of arresting them, if you know, like the rule of law or whatever, but at the same time, it's not... You know, there were times in reading Black Summer where people are, like, quitting the Constitution... You know, for six panels, they're just, you know, sitting there talking about it. Whereas this is a little more like, they're sitting and having a conversation, but it feels natural.
Right.
It doesn't feel like, oh, I have to print part of my senior thesis from my college, political class, you know. It just felt like, this is a conversation two people would have once he finds out that his best friend has become a killer.
That's just a talent of Chris Gage, though, I think. He's an excellent writer. There's so much stuff that he has written.
Yeah, if you start looking through, like, Marvel, he's done a lot of work at Marvel.
Well, not just Marvel, but DC.
What do you do at DC?
Or no. No, that was Moir. I'm sorry. I got
Tomaholics.
Hey, have another one.
No. Yeah, no, there's a lot of Marvel out there.
But
he touched it, I didn't even realize until I read Absolution, was like, oh, this guy rocks. And then I started to pay attention to some of the writers and some of their previous Marvel stuff. And
Right. But yeah, I love this series, and I really hope that more people will go out and buy the trade, pick up the issues, you know, write letters to Avatar, say, hey, do a second series, because we'd love to read.
Oh, yeah. Because
this is a book, I could see him, you know, like Robert Kirkman took the idea of zombies and created Walking Dead, and... people thought, well, he'd be lucky to get 12 issues, and now they're at 78.
Yeah.
I think Absolution, if more people kind of paid attention to it, he could do 5 years of this character.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, easy.
Very well.
Easy. And I'd buy it, you know? That's the more important part. So, yeah, I have all the issues, but that is one of those books that I've thought about several times, just going ahead and buying the trade anyway, because I want to keep the issues, I want to keep them in good shape, and I might as well just buy the trade to have on my bookshelf to lend to people. You know, say, hey, you got to read this.
Because I've got my all signed Christos.
Well, Dirt, do they operate like in an actual TPB?
Oh, I'm pretty sure they had it at C2E2 last year in the Wizard World, yeah.
That'd be nice. I would highly recommend to pick it up, folks.
Yeah, most definitely. These are $4 issues.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the trade, let's see, I think it runs about $20. It might be $24.99, but I want to say I think it's $19.99. But I mean, either way, it's
even
worth it.
Even at $24, yeah.
I mean,
I would definitely buy it. It's a great read and it's a great collection.
And you know, this is a book. Again, we joke about Avatar. One of the things they do is they make 30 covers for every single book.
Yeah, it was because I do remember Chris was saying, "Oh, would you like to buy the variants?"
So you know, if you find the right comic shop who ordered, you know, 10 of each cover. You might be able to cut a deal if you buy a whole set of one cover, you know. Sometimes they're just like, okay, we ordered 30 of each cover, and we didn't realize there were going to be 12 different covers for each book.
Right.
So sometimes you can get lucky on a deal like that. But
good book.
Yeah, I really enjoy that book. And I actually sat down today and reread the entire series. You know, I knew we were going to talk about it tonight, and I still loved every moment of reading through the series, and
so
even
you
the
found
stuff.
No holes in this series.
No, I mean the only part I really had a problem with was where he takes the blame for the husband's death, where he kind of pulls it on himself and says, "Well, if I hadn't been running around doing this stuff, he would still be alive."
I thought that was kind
of
weak. For
his
character.
Well, because kind of
yeah,
at the same time, it's like
we wouldn't have had that great scene that we did have with him at Techno
Alpha.
When he had the spikes come out, still a brilliant scene.
My point is that if the bad guys weren't being bad guys, there wouldn't have been a problem in the first place. I mean, you can say, well, if I hadn't been running around as a vigilante, other lives wouldn't have been put in danger. But lives were in danger if you hadn't have done anything.
True.
You know, so it's just like, it's not really your fault that bad guys are doing bad guy stuff. You know, just because maybe you stepped over the line. The problem is they were stepping over the line to begin with.
You know, my favorite cover is issue 5.
Is that the regular?
Yeah, these are all regular covers.
You didn't buy the wrap or the...
No.
Auxiliary or...
No,
the...
because when I was there talking with Christos, I wanted to be able to afford to buy the whole set. So I was just like, yeah, you know.
I didn't buy my book.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, great
Actually,
series.
I think I read the first 3 issues. When I went to C2E2, and then I was like, okay. And I started talking to him, like, okay, yeah, I'll definitely buy the whole set.
Yeah. So, all right,
good
well,
stuff.
That's going to do that for now. We are going to take one more quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about some of Avatar's current ongoing series. They're still ongoing, and some of the stuff they've got planned for next year. So, hold on to your hats, folks. We'll be right back for the final installment of... What is this? Episode 6. Episode 6. I'm drinkingtoomuchbeer.com.
What's up, all? This is Sween Hollick from Radical Retro Turtle Toy Talk, and you're listening to a Primo Pop Culture Network podcast.
Farewell and adieu.
Oh, we're done?
Fair Spanish ladies. No.
Who's the Spanish lady?
What?
I'm so confused.
Jaws.
Hey, guys.
Jaws
welcome back to Comaholics. This is episode 6. Wrapping up our Avatar-centric special, and we're going to be talking about some of the current Avatar series that are going on that we're reading and some of the stuff we're looking forward to coming out in the near future. So, first of all, let's just kind of talk about what other stuff does Avatar have going on right now that hasn't wrapped up yet that you're reading?
Let's just get it out of the way, and let's talk about Cross.
All right, the new series, Family Values, mm-hmm. which issue
6
just came out, 7 will be wrapping up. This storyline, and very disturbing this time around.
It is.
But the original Cross series had some disturbing stuff, but it was a little more, I don't know, because maybe it was the first time you're introduced to it, whereas here this time around, it's like they had to...
No holds barred.
Yeah, they upped the shock factor a little bit, and... took the story in directions that I wasn't expecting, more often than not.
I think that was the point.
Just trying to shock you more?
Just the moral twist of... Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, when you title it Family Values, after reading the original Cross series, and then when I knew that Family Values was coming out, I was like, okay, you know that there's going to be a lot of moral ambiguity.
Close to home.
Yeah, well, it's like, what was the Family Values tour?
Right.
With the bands in it, and you're just like, okay, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So when Family Values is done, are they going to do this 3D one first, or is it going to
my understanding
to this other one?
Yeah, my understanding is it'll be Family Values 7, it'll be the 3D special, and then it starts Cross
Psychopath. And I'm really excited about
Psychopath. That sounds cool. That sounds really cool.
Because
it sounds very interesting, and It seems like somebody that's actually out to hunt the cross.
Right.
And he's, like, very anti or the opposite role model of how are we going to hide and protect ourselves and live, survive, as opposed to, you know what?
It's like, screw these guys.
We're going to
go back
and we're going to get them. And we're not going to be defeated. So. No, Cross, it's great.
I mean, one thing about Cross, I guess we can say that, you know, zombie movies always have this thing where you have to get bitten by the zombies in order to get infected. 28 Days Later had that whole thing of, you know, drop of blood falls in the guy's eye socket and suddenly he's infected and becomes one of those type zombies. And once you realize that bodily fluids cause the you know, infection to continue, Cross kind of takes it to the next extreme. Well, what other bodily fluids are there that we can play with, you know? And that kind of gives you the idea of tone for the entire series. It's just kind of that...
Yeah, this is one of those series that, like, you really, really don't want to spoil it too much.
Hmm?
There's just so much drama. And like
depravity?
Intense, yes. Yeah.
Just be prepared. This is not for the kids.
I'm excited about Psycho-Pass because I think it's finally going to answer some questions, I'm hoping, that I have about how this is brought on and what it can, what you know, like the science of it.
Do you think so?
I think so.
I think it's about time for a little bit more history.
Yeah.
You know?
Explanation just a little bit of what's going on and why have we gotten this far. And
the psychological side of it, you know, where it's like, okay, all right, we're really starting to, like, grab onto this intense emotional, and like I said, the depravity that you were talking about earlier, where it's just, it's so, like, we've talked about this, because you and I have been, like, talked about over the phone about, like, oh, I just read The Last Family
Values.
You
know what? Just going through, like, not only talking about Family Values, but also Neonomicon. That's also coming up, too.
Neonomicon.
Yeah, that's another issue that's coming up. And
is two or three out already?
Actually, we have two. Three is coming up. There was the handbook is out there, the horn book or something like that. It's like an auxiliary of everything, and it has extras that go along with comics.
Which I thought the courtyard was the auxiliary.
No. I mean, this is. I think Hornbook Artifact isn't that more of a like sketches and profiles and things
like
bio.
That. It looks like it's a little bit more pricier than the actual standalone issues. No, but. 3 is coming out here, and yes, once again, Apocalypse mentioned the courtyard. Excellent, excellent.
Yeah, which we talked about last time.
Yeah. Man.
So that's another series that we're all currently reading. I've been reading Night of the Living Dead. I don't know if either of you guys have been reading those.
No,
I got it on a new season. Right, it's good. I got the holidays.
There's the holiday special.
Like the nativity scene. if your local comic shop has a few, I would say eat it up real fast. Next to that, there's also the hippie one.
The regular.
Yeah.
The regular Night of the Living Dead series, which is... It's supposed to be taking place concurrently with the black and white original movie.
Good.
So it's like the original movie set in late 60s. You know, this is happening at the same time, although that one was set just outside of Pittsburgh, whereas this series is set down in Washington, D.C., so it's like you got hippies going to like this Vietnam War protest, and then the zombie apocalypse breaks out in the middle of their sex and getting high, you know, which makes
National
more
guards there too, just to make sure you know that they like.
Well, because if it's set in the '60s, you got to have the National Guard, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, someone's getting shot. But
there's a few cells of the president in there too, and it's a good series. Actually, I've seen some of the old Night of the Living Dead, and it's not that I wasn't impressed, but I do like the one that Avatar is printing right now. Mm.
Well, and it's another one of those series where they just kind of said, all right, what are the rules? No, there are none. Oh, okay, cool.
I think Avatar is a real knack for grabbing talent.
So true.
I just stayed...
Just finding artists you've never heard of before.
And putting them out there in a way that...
Fever dream.
Just...
It should be wrapping up with 12.
Right? Yeah. No, that's fine. Just the way that they present them, it's... It's well done.
No, you've been reading Fever Dream?
Yes, I have.
And what's that about?
Actually, it's... I'm not really into the whole vampire scene and all that, but I will admit, I am kind of drawn over this. It is periodic.
So I take it it's a vampire book?
Everybody has been kind of making fun of the actual Vertigo one, the American Vampire. Okay. They've been in comparison to. But this is an older tale told by the Martinez or whatever.
That was great. I like that.
Yeah,
by that guy.
Fly for the heifer.
But it is a very well put together story. Intriguing. And they just released 9 a couple weeks ago. And it is one of those that I do usually the opposite. Every one comes out, I read one. As opposed to waiting up for a while. But Avatar is printing a lot of good things and great things right now.
Now, there are some other stuff that they've done in the past.
Super God.
Oh, Super God 4, you still need to read. We need to.
Were you going to say Ignition City?
I was going to say Ignition City. Did you read that one? I
love that one. Oh, that's a fantastic story, folks. If you're ever like digging in the old bins of your friendly neighborhood comic store, if you come across that one, that is a great read. I think it was only 6 issues.
Is that his zombie book?
Actually, it's not zombie. It is kind of like a port between Earth and the Outer Rim. Good read, great read.
Okay. What was the other one? Oh, Gravel. What was Gravel about?
Never read it.
You never read Gravel?
Wormwood. There's also
Chronicles of Wormwood, which is about the Antichrist.
That one, yeah, with the two buddies.
The thing is, though. At the same time that Chronicles of Wormwood came out, there was also Wormwood Gentleman Corpse.
That was a different. Well,
yeah, I know that was something completely different. Completely different.
It was bizarre.
Right, but there was always kind of this like fanboy, which Wormwood are you reading? You know, type of thing. And the other one had Ben Temple Smith and artwork, so I read that one. But and then Wolfskin was
Wolfskin.
One I that's when I tried to hunt down, and I had a hard time finding back issues for that.
Is that the same artist from
Cross?
No, Black Summer.
I don't know, but that one came out a couple years ago, and so I might end up having to pick up a trade when we go to C2E2 or something. But
oh, I can't wait, C2E2. It's only a couple months away.
Yeah, I know. They're opening their applications now for press badges. So we'll see. And then Freak Angels. Do you read Freak Angels?
No.
That's another Warren Ellis. Also Captain Swing.
I do have 1 and 2 of that. 3 and 4 should be coming out. They're like 2 years in the waiting. Almost.
One of the like series they started and forgot
it was
about.
Like the Brian Bendis Halo, the one that he did for Marvel. Right. He did 1 and 2 back and back. I'm just month after month. And then 3 and 4 came out 2 years later, practically. You were left on the biggest cliffhanger of a great story.
And then there was also Dr. Sleepless. Came
I've
out.
Heard great reviews. Myself never read it.
And then No Hero. And No Hero, the only thing I know about No Hero is that a lot of people compared it to Black Summer and said it was the better of the two.
Mm.
So if you're
maybe thinking, No Hero,
No Hero, it's something about
is that
Ellis
as well.
It's Ellis as well, and it's I believe some guy in like San Francisco in the '60s gets superpowers and becomes the anti-hero in that day and age. So it's kind of the idea of turning things around during the height of the whole hippie whatever thing.
Well,
so.
I really want to check out issue 4 of Super God, because I was turned on by Super God at Wizard World, just talking to the guy at the table, and it's in a nutshell, I can sum it up as quickly as possible. It's basically different nations create their own superhero to basically solve the world's problems, and they all come up with their own different methods. And
they all fight?
Yeah, there's some fighting. And yeah, in a nutshell, that's it.
It's like Superhero Olympics.
Sure. Well, they meet at a world stage where.
Right. Do they like gladiatory?
No.
Oh,
no.
Gladiatorial, like, battle each other? Or?
Like, it all, like, the major chaos.
Now the lead in the race, it's Superman!
The biggest chaos cause is that India creates this god. Like this godlike superhero that basically does whatever it takes to save the environment, save Earth. Well, his process does not include humans.
Whoops.
Yeah. So it just like it goes from there. You know, huh. And then you've got these other superheroes.
I am interested, Avatar.
Yeah. No, it's good. I think they need to hurry up, though. Four is out, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. So we'll have to
there's
get
a
one
large
four,
gap
yeah.
there between 3 and 4.
I mean, one thing that I think Avatar has kind of started to carve out this niche, because for a while they were kind of the horror comic company there for a while, because they were doing Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Which makes sense, they're doing Cross.
Yeah, now they're doing stuff like Cross and Night of the Living Dead. So they kind of had that, you know, horror kind of feel to it. But now they've kind of started, you know, I don't want to say shifting away necessarily, because they're still doing that stuff, but, you know, doing Black Summer, which is an anti-hero book, doing Absolution, which is an anti-hero book, doing No Hero, which is an anti-hero book, doing, you know, it's like deconstructing the modern-day superhero is kind of becoming their little, you know, secondary niche here, where you used to expect that from, you know, maybe like Vertigo might kind of walk that line a little bit with Hellblazer or something, whereas now Avatar is just kind of like, okay, well, you thought Hellblazer was something, you know, we're going to turn it up to 11.
Oh, they turn it up to the extreme.
Yeah. Just kind of push the boundaries and push the limits of...
Which I like, because I'm a big Marvel fan, so I'm used to that code, that pattern that Marvel follows.
Softness and... Not softness, I mean...
Well, I mean, the whole Dark Reign series was pretty... It was reminding me a lot of, like, Detective Comics, just really dark. Now I'm, like, getting way off the subject, but... It just feels that, like, what Avatar Press is trying to do is create this realm where fanboys like me who are used to a certain pattern of what comics are supposed to be, they're kind of going off the beaten path and like kind of got that shock factor turned into like the sensation that I can't resist.
Right.
You know? Right. I feel like I need it.
Yeah, like, well, one thing with like Crossed...
Yeah,
like, I feel bad reading it, because it's one of those things where...
Can't wait till the next issue.
No, it's like people in this alternate universe, if I stop reading the book, then nothing more bad happens to them.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like that physics thing where it's like, you know, there's a cat in the box, is it alive or dead, and you don't know until you open the box, and once you see it and observe it, then it actually becomes real, you know? And it's kind of like these fictional characters, this other world... They're living just fine until I read the book, and then because I'm reading it, their life is completely down the toilet. And it's like every issue of Family Values, I'm like, I feel so bad for these people. Like they're totally being destroyed just for my amusement, you know?
I felt the existence of that.
Like, I feel guilty reading that book. Yeah. And then
For me, it's like a pleasureful guilty. Like, Dan and I talk about this, too. There's some just, like, disturbingly arousing scenes.
What are you talking about?
And, you know, it's just...
So you got a mom complex going
yeah,
on?
No. Just with... Well, not just necessarily Family Values, but, you know, Neonomicon, and just, like, some really...
There's a lot of nudity in their books that you don't get. Talking about Night of the Living Dead, they haven't had an issue yet that didn't show... uppers and downers on the female, and I'll word it that way.
Right.
I mean, it's like in the holiday special, the Christmas special, there's a female with no bottoms for 3/4 of the book. Just her running around, flapping in the wind, you know? And, wrong term,
does
I guess,
it look
but,
like a Does it look like a poorly packed suitcase?
But the point being is that it just kind of goes with that whole idea of whatever taboos there are in mainstream comics... They're ditching them, and they don't ditch them in that underground comics kind of way.
No, but they do it.
Like, there are a lot of independent, like, quote-unquote independent publishers that do crazy off-the-wall stuff, but it feels like a low-print run, low-budget comic. Whereas Avatar will knock down those taboos. Avatar will show you the nudity, show you people's entrails getting ripped out. They'll show you babies getting shot in the head if it has to do with the story. But at the same time, it doesn't feel like an underground comic. It doesn't feel... This is a top-notch, high-quality, you know, slick paper, hypnotic ink smell...
Yeah, we talked about that earlier, the aroma.
The aroma of an Avatar smells
good. It does,
different.
That nice...
It's like an accordion. It's not the sound that it makes, but the smell that comes out of it when you're using it.
I still think you're wrong, but...
But not
anyway. But regardless, you know,
that's
it's
a Frank Zappa quote for all you.
It's not.
Games.
It's not.
You're out there. I
black and white
there.
On newsprint, the cheapest possible way they get it to market. These are high quality books, and it's just, it's, you know, you can't believe what they actually do in some of these books. Like, you can't believe, like, you know, you read it and you're like, oh my gosh, did they just, you know, like a lot of the stuff, again, going back to Crossed, a lot of the stuff at Crossed, you're just like, oh my god.
Shocking.
Like, who
pops up at you.
Who would print this? What kind of depraved mind?
You know? But then you're like, I can't wait till the next
issue. Yeah, when's the next issue coming?
I got to call up DJ House and we got to talk about this. I want to know how you feel, because I know how I felt.
No, but seriously, guys, right now, my money's on Avatar. Great company. Great publisher.
And
everything about them.
Yeah, and like I said, it's stuff that even if you don't necessarily like it as much, you know, like even, you know, something like Lady Death. You guys didn't like Lady Death as much.
No.
I thought it was fun. Fun
I'll
to
read
get,
it. I'll
but,
still read it.
You know, we still had a pretty good conversation about it. You
we
know what
did.
I mean? I mean, it still
we
got.
We talked about it when we were even on pause, too.
We yeah, we did. We talked about it during the commercials. So.
Yeah, and it was still a good read. We don't want to, like, harsh on it. But still, I mean, we love Avatar and we'll support it. It's a good.
Well, I'm a homebrewer. And Avatar reminds me of, like, one of those fine microbreweries you find that just keeps putting out original good stuff.
Good analogy, man. It's like America. Like,
well, Avatar is America.
Well, like, you know, I'm going to throw this out there. Like, Belt Brewery, one of my favorite breweries in Kalamazoo, Michigan. They specialize in making some of the most fantastic original stuff. And they're not afraid to do something that's not the norm.
I want someone
and
to make a peanut
Avatar,
butter ale. Where's the peanut butter ale?
Wow. It's coming, man. I'm working on it. You know, you tried fusing peanut butter with barley and hops and
I
water.
Think it tastes really
work.
Good. I thought it would taste really
which
good,
which is funny because right behind DJ House right here is a 5-gallon fermentation tank of my honey wine that I need a bottle.
Yum, yum, yum. Good stuff.
We'll save that for the 6-hour podcast that we're going to do.
Well, we're already an hour and a half into this one, so. Yeah.
But thank you, Avatar. Awesome prints, man. Really good prints that you guys are putting out. I like it. Enjoy it.
One love.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode of Comaholics. I want to thank you guys for listening. Don't forget to check out the rest of ineedcomics.com for more comic reviews and comic news as we find it. Also, don't forget to check out the rest of the Pop Culture Network. You'll find TV reviews, tour reviews, wrestling podcasts, animation podcasts, just all kinds of crazy, weird, fun stuff. Don't forget to check out our forums at popculturenetwork.com. And as always, if you want to reach us, you can always, if you want to get a hold of us at ineedcomics.com, just send an email to comicbooknews@popculturenetwork.com. You can also call our 24-hour voicemail line. It's area code 217-953-4025. 24 hours a day voicemail. You can feel free. You never have to talk to a human being if you don't want to. You can just call, leave us a message. And other than that, you know, just I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this podcast here. And I'm going to let these guys have one final word before we go off the air tonight, because they're both giving me this weird look. So so go ahead. You get one last word.
All right. Well, if anybody
vinyl. Vinyl. Okay, here you get a word. I said vinyl.
I was going to say
aluminum?
No. I was going to say bender.
Vinyl bender. Vinyl bender.
All right, peace.
Later.